All they wanted was a little bit of time for me to clear my head, to clear my head. Got to clear it up. That's the starting line. I'm Blake Murphy. This is Jays Talk Plus. The Jays have to hope that an off day yesterday, coming off of an afternoon game, so a little bit of an extended break here, clears the heads of where they were at. Some openly frustrated players after they dropped 2 of 3 to the Royals and went right back to not scoring a lot of runs after they finally ended the streak of sub-6-run games. They scored a single run in Tuesday's game and a single run in Wednesday's game. Some frustration setting in, certainly at this point on the offensive side. Heard some frustrations from a Jose Berríos that was more, and Chris Bassett that were both more about themselves and their performances, but this kind of permeating feeling that the starting pitching has to be perfect right now for the Blue Jays to win baseball games. Jose Berríos, by the way, was named American League Pitcher of the Month for the month of April today. Well-deserved, very, very strong numbers. He pitched 43 and two-thirds innings with a 1.44 ERA, 31 strikeouts, and was worth 1.7 wins above replacement per Baseball Reference's version of wins above replacement, which is the better one on the pitcher side. A little bit of other news for you today. We're going to find out more news between now and Sunday about what the Blue Jays intend to do with that fifth rotation spot, if they're going to pitch someone on shorter rest, if they're going to bullpen day it, if Alek Manoah will be activated from his rehab assignment. But per Shai Davidi of Sportsnet.ca, Nathan Lucas is joining the team in Washington. There are three possibilities. There's always the possibility someone's hurt and we just don't know yet. But the other two possibilities would be Addison Barger is headed back down to AAA Buffalo. They've given his bat a shot. He has had some good process. He's had some nice throws from the outfield. He's hit the ball pretty hard at times, but he could potentially go back down. And then Daniel Vogelbach is closing in on the 45-day mark, which is important. With veterans of a certain amount of service time, they can agree with the team to an advance consent. And what that does is it gives the team 45 days without the contract fully guaranteeing for the entire season. So the Jays could cut bait on Vogelbach, who they haven't used a ton and hasn't hit super well in his role, super well-liked guy, but has just not found his way to a lot of playing time. The Jays could cut bait on that. Vogelbach would become a free agent. The Jays would only be on the hook for the prorated amount of his $2 million salary. So those are some possibilities to keep an eye on that we'll surely hear about pregame from John Schneider a little later on. Someone you won't hear tonight, but you'll hear the rest of the weekend, the rest of the series, is Dan Schulman, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays. Tonight is Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+, so we won't have the game on Sportsnet. You can go to apple.co/MLBGift for a free trial of Apple TV Plus to check out those games. We'll also talk to Ryan Spielbergs in the second segment. He's the analyst on the call tonight. Was a great guest on the show last year. But Dan Schulman will be back in the chair for Saturday and Sunday. He joins us now. Dan, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Blake. I'm well. How about you?
I'm pretty good. So you, not only are you not on tonight's call because it's Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus, but you also weren't on this last series. You know, you're not going to do 162 out of 162. Did you happen to recognize the voice who filled in for you? And what'd you think?
I did. I also want to thank the people on Twitter who, whenever Buck or I are off for a game, are off for a game, are like, "Is everything okay? Is there something wrong with Dan and Buck?" And very, very few, if any, people do 162. And every now and again, just a little bit of time off. So yeah, I took these three off with the Apple game and an off day today, kind of three games turned into 5 days, and that's nice. But yeah, I did recognize the voice who was doing the game, and I thought Ben did a great job, and Joe and the crew were great with him, and Ben's still getting his feet wet, but he's picking up things fast and he loves doing it. And the players and the coaches and all that have been so helpful for him. So I didn't get to see yesterday, but I got to see Monday and Tuesday. He had a little more action on Monday, a few more exciting plays to call on Monday. But it was very fun dad stuff, just sitting back, beer in hand, and watching him do the baseball game.
Yeah, you and Rod Black, right? Rod Black gets his son debuting in Milwaukee with a beer in his hand. You get to hear Ben Schulman do the call when you're off for a couple games. Fun stuff, and I agree. I thought Ben, I only caught Monday's game on TV because I was down at Tuesday's game. And radioed it for Wednesday's game, but I thought him and Joe were great. So process-wise, you're in Washington, you're doing this series, but there's no Sportsnet broadcast tonight. Do you treat today like it's a normal game day and you just don't do the call? Are you getting a round of golf in? What are you doing today?
Well, I don't play golf. I'm not allowed because I'm too terrible. So nobody allows me to play golf. And I'm actually not in Washington yet because today was an Apple game. Instead of flying down Wednesday with the team, and normally me and Buck or me and Joe, whatever, we fly with the team. But because they were flying Wednesday and I'm not on the air till Saturday, I'm stealing a little extra time at home. So
awesome.
I am still in Toronto. And if anybody's on the 7 p.m. flight to Reagan tonight, I'll see you there. I'll see you at the terminal later on tonight over at Pearson.
Well, glad you're able to stretch us into a proper couple of days off here, and appreciate you coming on with me on a day that is otherwise an off day. Also appreciate that there's another person around the Blue Jays who isn't a big golfer. I thought I was the only one. So that is good to know. Dan, so look, you were not on the last three games. You did not miss a lot of offense. Let's talk about the actual team right now. They went 20 games in a row without scoring six runs in a game. We talked about it a bunch. It tied a franchise record. They got off that mark on Monday and then only scored two runs over the subsequent two games, which is almost exactly what the 2008 team did. They scored four runs over the subsequent four games after they broke their streak. Tonight, the Jays are going to see Patrick Corbin, who is a lefty. They've hit lefties better than righties. They haven't seen a ton of them. He also has, and shout out to Avery of Gate 14 for pointing this stat out, the lowest rate of called and swinging strikes of anyone in baseball who's pitched 20 innings this year. Do you kind of get the feeling that after an off day to clear their heads, like, it's kind of got to happen against Patrick Corbin of all people?
I mean, if you want to be the team that you think you can be, you've got to win these games. You know, they just went 2-5 against Kansas City in seven games. And Kansas City's good. They're better than they were. But I've just been sitting here this morning, like, doing my national stuff. And they've got some good players. But the Blue Jays need to win this series. Like, you can't be, you know, you're going to run into the Orioles and you know, other really good teams. And this is the kind of series they need to win. And looking at the numbers, it's remarkable how similar some of the numbers are between the Blue Jays and Nationals offensively. Washington hits a little bit more, walks a little bit less. They run a lot more. And that's, I think, a huge key to this series. They've got like 53-54 stolen bases already in 31 games, which is a huge number. But Patrick Corbin is a guy they should get, and maybe they need to get. I know Mackenzie Gore's overall numbers don't blow you away, but I've seen him pitch, and his stuff, I'm sure you've seen him pitch, his stuff is, it's good. Like, that's, he's another stuff guy, and that's who they'll get on Sunday. They'll get somebody tomorrow, Jake Irvin, that they haven't seen before. So yeah, if you, you know, you've got a good pitching matchup in your favor tonight, and they got to go get it. I would imagine they'll have eight right-handed bats in there. And again, you just keep waiting for Springer and Guerrero and Bichette to break out. Like, Turner's doing his job. Jansen's doing his job. Varsho's doing his job. Davis Schneider's doing his job. Ernie Clement is holding his own. They've got guys doing it. But unless the, you know, the top three in the order, assuming they're still the top three in the order tonight, we don't know yet. But assuming, you know, until those three guys start hitting, you know, not the best they've ever hit, just kind of getting close to career norms, it's going to be really hard for them.
Yeah, and look, I look at a series like this as well, and I don't mean this disrespectfully to Patrick Corbin, but he has an ERA of almost seven, and he doesn't miss bats whatsoever. One of the caveats that we've heard about the Jays' struggles offensively, and this isn't going to make anyone feel better, but, you know, to the extent that we can quantify it, they've faced one of the most difficult schedules so far. They have faced the second-best pitching based on stuff plus so far this season. That's per TJ Stats on Twitter, who tracks the quality of competition aspect of that. But, and so that's fine, but if then you run into Patrick Corbin, who has an ERA of seven, and Jake Irvin, who, you know, is a, he can eat some innings, but he's not, you know, he's not going to contend for any Cy Youngs in his career, I don't think. And even Mackenzie Gore, who has great stuff, but, you know, that's a young-ish pitcher, and you're supposed to be a team that hits lefties. If you come out of this series and you haven't done a lot of damage, the kind of, well, we face so much good pitching starts to it starts to fall on deaf ears for me, I think, a little bit. You mentioned there, Dan, if they're still the top three. Obviously, the Jays can't move George Springer, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., and Bo Bichette all elsewhere in the order. I guess technically they could, but it would very much seem like you're shaking things up because you don't have another solution there. But could you see a tweak to that order? And I'm thinking particularly, you know, George Springer in that leadoff spot maybe, because this is, you know, Springer maybe even more than Vlad and Bo. the underlying why of the struggles is something that does go back to last season a little bit more.
Yeah, it's interesting because you're right. There are little tweaks, big tweaks, and overhauls, right? And we all know that, and every big league manager in front office says this, they don't want to convey panic to the players. That having been said, what are they, 32 games in? They're 20% of the way through the season now, and there just aren't signs that it's getting better. I think the littlest tweak you could make, and maybe you wouldn't do anything at all. Like, I don't think any of this is a magic cure, you know, right, a magic pill or anything like that. But how many times have we seen them go 1-2-3 in the first? And I think you at the least, if I were in charge, I think at the least I would move Turner up to third, and I'd want to get him up in that first inning. So say you even leave Springer up there, you could go Bo 2 and Vladdy 4 or something like that. Bo's hit a ton of 2. Vladdy hasn't hit a ton of 2. And I don't think, again, that's the reason he's struggling. But, you know, just maybe moving him out of that spot. Who knows? You have limited ways you can try to fix things. You can call guys up from the minors. You can adjust the playing time on the roster. Or you can change the batting order. So I think at minimum, I think I'd move Turner up to 3. If you do move Springer out of the leadoff spot, let's say you're putting him in the 5 hole or somewhere like that. So I guess my next question, I'll bounce it right back to you, is who's leading off? Like to me, Bo Bichette's not a leadoff guy. He's not a get on base guy. He's a, you know, if Bo hits 290, his on base percentage is 320 or 330, right? So is it Davis Schneider? Schneider doesn't quite play every day, although it's getting close the way that he's been playing. You know, against a righty, do you put Biggio up there? Or if Clement is in the lineup, you know, do you just like his contact and ability to maybe make something? I don't know. There's no obvious plan B here, right? So I think I'd start with a little tweak, but I don't think I'm waiting another month until the overhaul if things don't get better.
Yeah, I'm not waiting another month for a lot of things, honestly, in a year that is this urgent. And, you know, as guys are getting further into their 30s or further closer to free agency, et cetera. So in terms of the answer to your question, I'm someone who, you know, OB on base percentage is probably the thing that I care about most in the leadoff spot. Just don't make outs, have right, good at bats. So, you know, you could Turner there. The team has too little power right now to put Turner in that spot. But I was a proponent of, you know, when those 2015, 2016 teams didn't have a natural leadoff option, Russell Martin made sense to me as a guy who could 350 OBP in that spot. And maybe it's not what a traditional leadoff hitter looks like, but it sets the table for your other guys. So against righties, I would be okay with a Kevin Biggio option. Mm-hmm. Series where you're facing a lefty on Friday and Sunday, I don't really know. It's, you know, you could convince me of doing just about anything in that spot. And, you know, my guess is they just roll with Springer in it because at least he's, you know, taking some walks and not striking out a ton. So maybe they like that as a, you know, the small silver lining of that spot. But yeah, I'm with you that they're going to have to shake something up at some point. Okay, the other thing that flows from this, obviously the hitters are frustrated. We would love to see more offense. Dan, how much do you, not worry, but how much is it on your radar that there are 4 starters right now, and they only have 4 of them? Well, we could talk about that in a second. But they're going up there every time, and it does kind of feel, I don't know if they feel that way, but I feel like if a pitcher doesn't give them, you know, 6 innings of 2-run ball, they don't have a good chance to win a ball game. Do you think there's an effect on this starting rotation because the offense has struggled for so long?
I mean, I think they're pitching pretty well, and the nice thing about them is they're all veterans, right? Yeah. They're all in their 30s, or Barrios might actually be 29, but he's been around forever. So they're, you know, these are four guys. These are 4 guys who have been doing this a long time, and I think that helps. And there was that stretch a couple of weeks ago where, yeah, they weren't scoring more than 5 in any game, but they were scoring 4 or 5 in just about every game. And during that stretch, I think they had a 7-3 stretch or a, you know, 10-4 stretch. You know, they were playing pretty well for a while because the starting pitching is good enough that you get 4 or 5 and you're probably going to win the game. You get 1 or 2 and you just don't have a chance. So I think those, like the list of things I'm worried about on this team, you know, that's a little bit further down the list because I think these 4 guys can handle it. But they're all going to have to be very good to great for this team to have a chance to make the playoffs. I wonder what they're going to do Sunday, and you talked about it. Does Does Manoah start? Do they have a bullpen day? Or do they just roll the four guys through this time because of the off day, and then they got two more off days next week? Like, they can do this any number of ways. And Manoah can make one more start on rehab, as you know, before they have to make a decision on up or down. But they don't really have a whole lot of other options right now, right? Like, their depth is gone. Mitch White is out of the organization. Wes Parsons is out of the organization. Yariel Rodriguez is on the IL. Paulo Espino got hit very hard in his last start. Bowden Francis is on the IL. Like, 3 weeks ago, they had some depth. Maybe not like top shelf depth, but they had some reasonable options. Those have basically all dried up. And, under the heading of you can never have too much pitching, Alek Manoah is a really important guy right now. So he's coming off by far his best outing. Do you roll the dice and say, okay, he did great, let's bring him up now while he's feeling good? Also, to go against a team in Washington that's not a juggernaut, right? They're not an offensive team at all, relatively speaking. If he doesn't start in this series and they needed him next time around, it's probably Minnesota or Baltimore. Minnesota's red hot, and Baltimore's Baltimore. So I'm almost thinking that they might do it on Sunday, just a bit of a softer landing spot. They did that last year. Remember, they brought him up to face Detroit, who was the worst hitting team at the time in the majors, and he had a good start. Didn't do him much good later on. So, ultimately he'll have to build on it. But I know I kind of bounced off your question here. But, yeah, they've got some things to figure out. I'm also curious whose spot Nathan Lucas is taking, and you talked about the options that exist there. But they're taking on water a little bit here right now, and it's time for them to hopefully turn it around, play closer to their ability, and just stay within a reasonable distance of the good teams in the American League.
Yeah, it's really difficult, and we could have looked at the pitching depth at the start of the year and thought that, hey, even though none of these options were like obvious, like who knows what Bowden's going to be as a starter? We didn't know what Yariel was going to be yet. We didn't know where Manoah was. I wasn't really a Wes Parsons believer, but he was on the 40 man. And your favorite phrase, these things have a way of working themselves out. They've worked themselves out too far. It's too worked out at this point. They need a rest day.
You mentioned Ricky Tiedemann too, right? I mean, if Tiedemann is healthy and is built up, he might have been in the conversation right now. Mm-hmm. So, and then again, just another setback for him. And this is, for a team to have a good season, you need good health and some guys to overachieve. And the Blue Jays are getting underachieving, and generally they've had good health, but it's kind of catching up to them now, especially on the pitching side. And this Ricky Tiedemann thing to me is really worrisome because, he keeps having things. And as the most likely indicator of whether or not a guy's going to get hurt is whether a guy's been hurt before. And this is, I think, three different things for him. You just hope it's minor. You hope he's okay. You hope we see him later on this season. But boy, the guy, imagine if one of the four starters went down with an injury. I mean, that would be devastating for this team right now.
I'd rather not imagine it, Dan, honestly. And like, look, even if you wanted to go off the 40 man, no one's pitching well at AAA right now. Chad Dallas is, was maybe the next up, and he had a really nice year last year. He's been off to a really tough start at AAA. Even Paulo Espino, who you mentioned, he's got a whip over 2 and an ERA over 6 at AAA. So I don't know that would be, and I kicked around some of the free agent names yesterday, and there's nobody out there, and certainly nobody who wouldn't need a couple minor league starts to get stretched out like we saw with a Blake Snell or a Jordan Montgomery in those situations. So it's pretty bleak. As you mentioned, they could get away with this for a little while. If they really wanted to just start the next starter without, no one has to start on short rest, but nobody gets those extra off days, then they could go as far as May 14th before they need one. And they could go all the way to the 21st with just one bullpen day if they really wanted and carry 9 relievers that whole time. But it seems... That seems like a lot to ask of those four guys and of your bullpen. One other note, too, to watch. If Manoah is activated on Sunday, even in his much better start in AAA, the one thing that he is, and we know this about Manoah, but it's particularly notable against the Nationals, you can really run on Alek Manoah, and the Nationals steal more bases than anyone other than Cincinnati. So that'll be, that's kind of a fun thing. I'm sure you went over a lot of their speedy guys in your prep for the Nationals, but what do you make of that part of this weekend's matchup, where this is a Nats team that, especially with Jacob Young, Lane Thomas, CJ Abrams, like they can really run, and the Jays haven't done the best of jobs preventing that.
I think they're going to go like crazy. I think the Dodgers and Royals, we saw that they tried to do it early in the count too. Like, teams aren't even messing around. If they think it, they look at the stopwatch and they have the numbers coming into the game and into the series. And I think it's a big point of emphasis for opposing teams is make them throw you out. And I think the Blue Jays have done a bit of a better job. Like, if you look at the numbers, I don't have them off the top of my head. Their overall caught stealing numbers are poor, but I think there were like seven or eight teams that are worse than them so far this year. I think Kirk's throwing has gotten a little bit better. You know, Jansen's just getting comfortable again, but I think he's thrown out a couple of guys. So again, it's not good. It could be worse, but it's not good. And I think the Nationals are going to run at every opportunity. I think you'll see guys run on the first pitch. I think you'll see guys, if they steal second and it's the right situation, say one out right-handed batter, they might go for third on the next pitch. I think you might see double steals. I think because that can rattle a pitcher too, right? If you get in his head with that, if Kevin Gausman, who also has, you know, not had a lot of success containing the running game at times, when he makes his start, if he's worried about the two guys on the bases, that might give the hitter an advantage. And if you're Washington, you have to use that to your advantage. You look up and down your lineup, and there aren't a lot of studs in this Washington lineup. And if you want to play like the name game, I mean, the Blue Jays name value, easily outdistances Washington. But again, the two teams are virtually identical in a lot of ways so far this season, because the Blue Jays have underachieved. But yes, I agree with you. I think Washington is going to try early and try often to steal bases in this series.
Which is, we'll see how that goes, because, and I'm with you. So the Jays have thrown out 8 of 36 base stealers, which in the current environment isn't that bad. The Mets, for example, the Mets have given up 42 stolen bases and only caught one base runner. Ooh. It's remarkable. They're the Ellie De La Cruz, but in reverse of base stealing at this point. So the Jays haven't made out that badly. You know, some of the like arm strength stuff that we can see, like Kirk has a couple where Cavan saved him with a good tag and things like that. I think you're going to see Lane Thomas and Jacob Young and CJ Abrams, Luis Garcia. Like, those guys are really going to push it. Dan, before I let you go here, it's Kevin Gausman tomorrow. We'll talk about Yusei Kikuchi in the next segment, since he's going tonight and we've got Ryan Spielberg's on with us. But Gausman has had three really good starts in a row now after that bad Rockies outing. And we've seen him pitch differently. You know, second time seeing the Yankees, and the Yankees are notoriously disciplined. He's going to change up the approach. A Royals team that's hyper aggressive, he's going to change up the approach and be super pitch efficient. What does it tell you about where Gausman's at, you know, after that delayed ramp up, that he is able to come out and, depending on the opponent, change the game plan a little bit, get deeper into games than he was in the first couple starts?
Well, allow me to pat you on the back. You wrote a great article today on sportsnet.ca about him mixing in some two seamers against righties. And I think what we're seeing from Gausman, because I did the Baseball Savant thing this morning and looked at his starts, and he's mixing it up more than he did certainly in his first year. Like, there were some starts first year and last year, and you know this, he could come out high fastball splitter and the game was over. Like, he was just toying with people. Then some teams started laying off the splitter. So here comes the low fastball to try to get some takes, mix in some sliders to the righty, try to steal a strike. And now mixing in the odd two seamer to a righty, and even mixing in the odd slider to a lefty. So it goes to show you, even at, I think he's like 33, maybe even at that age, with all the success he's had, you still have to evolve to stay ahead of the hitters. There's no question he's getting better and looking more like himself. His velocity is still fluctuating a little bit. The swing and miss is still fluctuating a little bit. And, you know, maybe we don't see those 12, 13 strikeout games, but if you can get through seven innings and give up only one run to the Dodgers, you're doing a lot of things right. So I think he's continuing to make adjustments with the help of Pete Walker and others. And at this point of his career, maybe it's necessary for him to stay and be an elite pitcher. But he's awfully competitive and awfully intelligent. And, you know, you had a long talk with him. You can tell from the article, he's a fascinating guy to talk to, the way that he breaks things down and thinks about it. And I think he's still kind of a little bit in the ramping up, what am I going to be this year kind of time for him. And, you know, he's feeling, well, this might work a little more than I thought it would, or maybe I've got to dip back on this a little bit because that's not working quite as much. But he's, you know, he's so gifted and so smart out there on the mound that he's still finding a way to be successful with it. And they need him. I don't know that they necessarily need him to be the ace Cy Young finalist, because look at the year Berríos is having. Look at the year Kikuchi is having, right? Like, they're blessed in the rotation right now. But I think he's tinkering more than we've seen in the first 2 years. And so far, the results, I think, have been promising.
Yeah, it's fun. It's always cool. And I mean, I really enjoy the psychological element of, you know, what a pitcher is doing up there. And, you know, he's not a two-pitch pitcher. He throws that slider a decent amount. But when you're primarily like no one is going up there sitting slider for Kevin right. Gausman, given the quality of the fastball and the splitter. And just, you know, the quote he gave me is like, you're trying to adjust before everyone adjusts to you. Right. And yeah, I find it fascinating. It'll be interesting as well. This is a Nationals opponent that is on the younger end in terms of position player age. They are not a particularly disciplined team, and they've seen relatively few splitters this year. So interested to see how he attacks a team that, you know, maybe isn't ready for a Kevin Gausman splitter day. It's ironically, I don't know that we'll see a lot of those two seamers that I wrote about on Saturday, but maybe next start. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning. Enjoy the rest of the day off and have a good series in Washington.
All right, Blake. Thank you, Chet. Look forward to talking again soon. See you later.
Dan Schulman, voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet. Not tonight because we don't have the game, but Saturday, Sunday, he'll be back in there. It'll be Dan and Joe this weekend with Hazel back on for the Saturday, Sunday of that series. Jamie and Caleb on Blue Jays Central for you. Eric Smith and Chris LaRue on the radio call for you. Ben Schulman filled in for Dan Schulman on TV, and now Ben Schulman's off this series, which is a vet move. You've got a three-game series bookended by off days. That's the series you miss. You end up getting a five-day break. Nice work, Ben Schulman. Dan Schulman as well, getting the couple days off there. Tonight is Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV+. So Jays Nationals will only be available on Apple TV. New and returning Apple TV Plus subscribers can access a two-month free trial of Apple TV Plus. Just go to apple.co/MLB gift. There are also step-by-step instructions on how to do this if you go to MLB.com or Apple Support, or just search, you know, step-by-step Friday Night Baseball. Pretty straightforward and free trial. And I confirmed that even if you have had a free trial in the past, you can also do this free trial for Apple TV Plus, so you can still check out tonight's game. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk to Ryan Spielbergs, who's going to be the color analyst on this Apple TV Plus Friday Night Baseball game between the Jays and the Nationals. The Spilly Goat joins us as Jays Talk Plus continues on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan Pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. I'm Blake Murphy. Jays off yesterday. Back in action tonight, 6:45. It's Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus. The game is available to watch only on Apple TV Plus, but new and returning Apple TV Plus subscribers can access a two-month free trial of Apple TV Plus. Go to apple.co/MLB gift. You can also find step-by-step instructions to watch Friday Night Baseball on MLB.com or Apple Support, or just Google. If you are listening to that game, the color analyst will be Ryan Spielbergs. He's also the co-host of Loud Outs on MLB Network Radio with CJ Nikowski. He's a Rockies TV color analyst. He's a former Jays Talk Plus guest. We bring him back now. Ryan, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, man. So you broke some pretty big news to me yesterday without knowing it. I had no idea that this statue from the Miami Marlins ballpark still existed outside the ballpark.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was somewhere, so I went on a little scavenger hunt and I found it. I think there's some things that have been really disappointing with the Marlins the last couple of years, from, you know, new ownership to getting rid of like the aquarium and all these different things. I miss the Art Deco. I miss the nuance of that thing. I don't even know what it's called, but I liked it. And so I went and found it, and then I was talking to one of the employees that works at Marlins Park, and I was like, so does this thing still work? And she told me, she was like, it does. It goes off every day at 3:00. but the water no longer works. And if the Marlins are playing at home, it will go off when there's a run scored. So thanks a lot, Derek Jeter, for moving that outside.
Well, I'm just glad to know it's okay. I haven't been to Marlins Park since it was still there. And it was like, I went during a time where the Marlins were not particularly interesting. And it was, other than the really good Cuban coffee they have at the ballpark, it was one of the best things about being there. So Ryan, you were there yesterday for Rockies Marlins, but you're shifting back to Apple TV Plus tonight for Friday Night Baseball. This is year two of doing the Apple TV Plus Friday Night Baseball calls. How are you liking it? How are you enjoying the, you know, changing, every once a week, every so often? I know you do the MLB Network show with CJ as well, so you do have your eyes on all of baseball. But this opportunity to get to do some national broadcasts, get to check out more teams than just the Rockies, how have you enjoyed it over the first year and change?
Well, I love it for so many different reasons. First off, I love baseball. So, you know, just watching baseball games is like a true passion for me. Like, I'm a fan at heart. I also like how things work. So it gives me the chance to go boots on the ground into some clubhouses that I don't normally get to go into. You know, like, I'm always, if you ever come and see it, like watch a Rockies game, or if you ever come to Coors Field, I do go into every team's clubhouse and I get to know the players. I think that's probably one of the most important things an analyst can do is really understand how, you know, the nuance of a player, or, you know, where they're from. You get so much more background by spending time with players, going face to face, eye to eye, you know, asking how they're doing certain things. So this just expands my opportunities to go around teams that I wouldn't normally go and see during the calendar year. So I love it. And beyond that, I mean, it gives me great appreciation for some of the organizations that do things different. You know, there's a lot of teams out there. Like, for example, like Toronto has been really good as far as like changing the culture in the clubhouse so that, you know, players feel comfortable. I know Ross Atkins and the ownership in Toronto spent a lot of money trying to build out the best, you know, facilities in baseball. And they're pretty damn close when you consider what the Blue Jays have behind the scenes that most fans don't see. And that really goes a long way. And maybe it doesn't go a long way yet with free agency the way that I know Blue Jays fans wanted to see, but it will over time, you know, pay itself off in dividends. So I think for me, as, you know, getting a chance to do these Friday night games, I just like seeing how all these teams operate. That's honestly what it comes down to is I get the chance to see some of the best teams in the world, best players in the world, and then I get to see how they work.
So what is your, I know you're having a lot of conversations with players as well, and I'm sure the couple hours there pregame are invaluable for you. What is your, like, prep like as you're getting, like, are you, I know from the broadcast that you are, you know, stat savvy enough to use them. You understand them. Obviously you have, you know, some level of value for them. How much when you're prepping, are you going through the numbers versus, hey, I remember this guy and I'm going to have a conversation with him about this. Like, what is your prep process for these games?
Oh, I got tons of numbers, man. I mean, like, I am, I think it's both. Like, I do want to know personal side, but I'm not a person that just rolls up, grabs a scorecard and just goes, hey, I'm going to go by my eyeballs today. Like, that doesn't work. So I know all the stats. I know all the numbers. Some of my numbers are usually very similar to what front offices have and what, you know, like, as far as game planning. So my numbers are extremely accurate. Like, I'll give you an example. Everybody's wondering why Vlad Guerrero is struggling. Do you know what he's hitting against fastballs against right-handers this year? Do you have any idea?
It's not good. I don't have the number handy. I would imagine it's sub 200.
So you're not even close. He's 1-for-15 on four-seam fastballs this season.
That's not
good. He's awful.
Yeah.
So I have the ability to, you know, like, if I'm going to watch Vlad Guerrero today, and, you know, unfortunately it's Patrick Corbin pitching against Guerrero. So I'd look up and see, I was like, okay, so lefty slider, he's going to see a ton of that. He doesn't have a hit on a lefty slider this year. You know, he's hitting 167 on a lefty sinkers, which is what Corbin features. So, I mean, to me, I'm coming after Guerrero the entire time with a fastball until he proves he can hit it. And that's the analysis you'll get from me is, you know, I have I have these type of numbers along with, I'll go talk to Vlad and find out what's going on, or I'll talk to a hitting coach like, hey, what do you see? Is he able to load up on his back leg? Is he, is there a mechanical flaw? Is his head pulling out? Like, is he hidden behind it? So I'll get to the nuts and bolts of it. But to your point, like, there's a lot of prep that goes into it, not just showing up and having it one quick conversation.
Yeah, that's the impression I get from listening to the broadcast, but I just am fascinated by the process side, getting to be around people who are calling the games and how different people prep differently. The Vlad example is a good one. I'd imagine if you're talking to people today, you'll get the impression that there's a lot going on and there are a couple different things he's trying to tweak or figure out at the same time, which I'd imagine is... have you ever been in a spot like that where, you're going up to the plate and there are a couple things in your head and it's hard to... does that make it harder to focus on what you're doing? And have you been in a spot like that where, hey, I got to fix this with my hands. I got to fix this with my load transfer. And there's just too much going on mentally.
There's no such thing of a player that has never gone through this.
Okay.
every player that plays this game long enough is going to go through a stretch where they just can't even see the baseball because they're worried about their hands. They're worried about, trying to cover the inside part of the plate. They're worried about so much stuff that you can't even see it. I've done this example with parents, whenever I teach them, I was like, hey, I want you to try this. I was like, I just want you to do the alphabet. I'm going to flip you baseballs and you're just going to go A, B, C, D, and you're just going to keep going while I flip you baseballs. People can't even, you can't even do it and hit. You cannot go A, B, C, D. Like people just, you stop. So I was like, all right, so if you can't even do the simplest, the simplest thing and recite the alphabet while you're swinging, what makes you think you could think about your hands or your leg placement while the ball is coming at you? What makes you think that's even possible? So that's the thing, is that your brain gets so cloudy with stuff when you're not going right. And then when you are going right, you're legitimately just seeing the ball and hitting it. And so a lot of that just has to do with confidence. It has to do with knowing that your prep work before the game, like you're in a really good spot so that when you do get in the game, it's automatic. To me, like when you see certain guys that are struggling, it looks like it's not automatic. It looks like there's, you can watch the gears grinding. So that kind of gives you an idea of just how simple trying to declutter your brain should be, but it's the hardest thing in the world when we're talking about a results-oriented business, multi-billion-dollar industry, and, there's a lot at stake.
Yeah, and look, the Jays also have, we could isolate it on one guy struggling, but all three hitters at the top of their lineup are struggling, in George Springer, Bo Bichette, and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I'd imagine there's some element of, there's a collective pressure when you're not the only one struggling as well. And Ryan, I went back and I listened to you came on with me in mid-August last year before a Jays Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus game. And we were talking about, at that point, you had this number ready for me, that the Jays were on pace to be the worst hitting team with runners in scoring position by OPS of any playoff team ever. And we both were kind of like, there's not a great explanation for why. It'll probably normalize. And it did normalize. They spent the rest of the season hitting really well with runners in scoring position. And by the end of the season, the numbers looked fairly normal. Well, guess where they are right now, Ryan? They're dead last in hitting with runners in scoring position again. So when you're in a spot like this where you might be struggling individually, but also as a group, you're not getting it done with runners in scoring position. The top three guys in the batting order are all struggling. What is that like? Does it take on like a bit of a collective pressure rather than guys individually just feeling that pressure?
Yeah, no, you certainly feel it. And I would have to dig into, what they do as far as chase rate goes with runners in scoring position. Cause I mean, that's often a good indicator.
It's pretty normal. It's not far off what they do in other situations. I pulled the numbers the other day and it's basically the plate discipline process is still pretty solid. They're just not hitting the ball well at all. Like the batted ball metrics and stuff like that are very weak when they're hitting with runners in scoring position, but they're not chasing a ton.
See, so that's good. So that's a good nugget. Then in that case, as like hitters, you just keep going. Like it's going to turn. Just keep going. Like, hey, like we're making good swing decisions. We're going through our process. We're hitting the ball. We're hitting the ball hard. It's baseball. You know, hey, guys, get it. It's baseball. Like, you want to come through every single time. Every player that plays and goes up to the plate wants a hit every single time. But it's not the case. You know, we've been conditioned to, you know, be able to take it at bat, strike out, get a hit, go on to the next one. Like, that's how we're conditioned. It's really quite remarkable when you think about baseball players, because, like, for a fan, it bubbles in you a little bit more than it does for players, because they've moved on. When a player does get frustrated is when they're not making good swing decisions, when they are feeling a certain pressure that's outside of the normal just baseball calendar year. So I can't tell you what George Springer's feeling. I can't tell you what Vlad or Bo Bichette's feeling. But if their numbers or underlying numbers and Chase and all these things are pretty much they're normal, then I would feel okay that they'll be eventually able to hit.
Well, hope you're right, and hope this conversation, like when we talked last August, this is the conversation that spurs them in the right direction. I think they went the night that after we had talked in the game you did, they went 0-for with runners in scoring position. But the game after that, they started picking it up and it started normalizing. So hopefully we're headed there. Wanted to pivot to the defensive side. I know, again, you're a guy that appreciates the numbers and things like that. I also remember you saying before you were a huge Devon White fan and being able to kind of, you know, I know you have Canadian family and things like that as well. So you got a few Blue Jays associations here. But when we think of Devon White and that elite defense in the outfield, that's now something that we're better equipped to put numbers to. When you look at this Jays team and a Dalton Varsho, or the team that you cover more regularly in the Rockies who have Brenton Doyle, how much do you find that those defensive metrics for outfielders line up with what you're seeing and what you experienced as an outfielder yourself?
So that's a really, really good question, because they don't always align. You know, like, defensive runs saved and outs above average don't always align with what my eyes are telling me. Brenton Doyle right now is a negative four defender in center field.
That doesn't sound right.
It doesn't sound right, and optically it doesn't look right. But, the Rockies have not been a good team. They've given up more hits than anybody. Brenton Doyle had been dealing with some, like, a leg issue where he fouled the ball off, so he's not running quite as well. But I also think the opportunities weren't there for him as often as we saw a year ago. So, I think there's times where we see certain players and you have in your mind's eye that, hey, this guy's really good because he's done it for so many years. And then we now have this data, the data that says, well, look, the recovery speed or his sprint speed's down, or his reaction time is down, and this is why he's scoring lower. I was like, oh, okay. I know in the case of Dalton Varsho, he's like off the charts with his reaction time in the outfield, which explains why he's been so good. He's seven outs above average right now in center field and in the outfield. So it's like, when you, again, like, my eyeballs a couple of years ago, the first time I saw Dalton Varsho in the outfield with the Diamondbacks, I was like, man, this guy sure does dive for a lot of baseballs. And it was like, it feels a little bit, you know, Eric Burns-ish, where he's like diving for stuff that I didn't think he needed to. But then the more and more and more I watched him, I was like, oh, okay, well, he's getting some really great jumps. And like, maybe he is diving, but he's getting great reads on, you know, like a jam single that he's taken away. So my original eye and assessment was not buying into Varsho, but then I started looking at reaction time, then watching a little bit closer, and I was like, okay, no, this guy's an elite defender. So I think, to your point, is you have to be able to do both. You can't just do one, because one doesn't tell the full story.
Right. Yeah. And I think that makes a lot of sense. And my process has generally been like, okay, this is what I'm seeing. Let's see if the numbers back it up. And then the most interesting thing you can have is when the numbers don't really line up with what you're seeing and you learn something, right? What is that gap? Am I seeing something wrong? Is there a limitation in the numbers? Is the sample too small, et cetera? So I find that process a lot of fun. Ryan, in prepping for this game, I would imagine a thing that stood out to you a ton is how aggressive the Nationals are on the base path. They have Jacob Young, who is still perfect on the season ceiling basis. Lane Thomas has stolen a bunch. CJ Abrams, who should probably be one of the next young breakout stars in all of baseball with this power speed combo at a premium position like shortstop. I guess I want to ask about it with the Nationals, but generally with the new stolen base environment, do you think you would have stole more base? I know you stole a handful every year when you were playing. You think you could get a little more juice on the base pass if you came around today?
Well, so part of the reason why, I mean, I probably could have stole more, but I was a right-handed hitter, fourth outfielder that had to face lefties.
Right.
So like, I got caught a bunch of times because I was going first movement off a lefty. I would have loved to face righties more so I'd have a better chance to steal some bags. I think it is, you know, some of the rules are benefiting aggressive clubs, but I also think that there's been, you know, based on how pitchers throw and, you know, I don't think there's a lot of attention paid to, you know, changing up times or changing up, you know, like a slide step versus, you know, a high leg kick, because pitchers are ultimately trying to throw the ball with effort. And, you know, it's hard to throw a ball with effort when you slide step. So I just think that the game, yes, with the bigger bases and with the timer and with the disengagement rule, I think it does benefit. But I also think there's a part of it where players just don't, pitchers don't really care. You know, they don't really care about it. I believe, was it Danny Jansen's only caught one base stealer this year? And Young did get caught yesterday.
Corey Seager missed that.
Pushed him up. Yeah, he pushed him off the bag. So he finally got caught. But I just, like for Kikuchi tonight, because he's throwing, you know, it's just varying your times, and then you'd be able to put down base runners. So it's just to me, it's a matter of a lot of different variables. It's not just whether a team is stepping on the gas and trying to steal bags. You have to have personnel. You have to have the willingness to do it. You have to have a coaching staff that's teaching some of these guys. There's a lot, and not all teams want to do it.
And to your point, tonight is lefty on lefty, so maybe we won't see it a ton tonight as well. Kikuchi against Corbin. Can't believe this is, Brian, this is why, and you would, this is why you're a better professional than I am. This is why, so the Jays were off yesterday. I did my prep for today's show yesterday, so I missed that Jacob Young got caught stealing yesterday. It's funny it played out that way. Looking forward to hearing you on the call tonight. Got like a minute left with you here. What are you looking for from Kikuchi? I know he's a guy you go way back to your time in Japan together. This is probably the best we've seen him.
I just love that he's gone back to his slower breaker. I mean, that was a pitch that in Japan, like, everybody wants to throw things hard here in the States. And for Kikuchi, when he was coming up, he was one of the, you know, like, they basically thought he was the next, he was the Japanese Clayton Kershaw. That's how they dubbed him. And he was my teammate, you know, in 13. And when he was at his best, it was a fastball with a slow breaker and a backflip slider. I think he got away from that, just trying to throw really hard. And this year it looks like he's brought back the slow breaker. So I love seeing that, because I think it just gives you so much differences in your pitches, in the velocities that hitters have to worry about.
Yeah, and he's, like you said, gone back to it a ton in place of, not entirely in place of the slider, but the usage has flipped on them a little bit. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time out this morning, man. Really looking forward to you on the call tonight.
That was a great talk. Appreciate it.
Ryan Spielberg's Apple TV Plus analyst, co-host of Loud Outs on MLB Network Radio with CJ Nikowski and Rockies TV color analyst. He will be on the call for Jays Nationals tonight, 6:45 game. It's Friday Night Baseball on Apple TV Plus. The game is available to watch only on Apple TV Plus, but new and returning Apple TV Plus subscribers can access a 2-month free trial of Apple TV Plus at apple.co/MLB gift. Fans can also find step-by-step instructions on how to watch Friday Night Baseball on MLB.com or Apple Support, or just Google it. I have received a couple DMs on how to do that. Just Google it. I don't know how to walk you through how to get the trial and stuff like that. But you guys can figure it out. It's Yusei Kikuchi against Patrick Corbin. Sportsnet back on the broadcast as usual for Saturday and Sunday's game. Dan Schulman, Joe Siddle, Hazel May, Jamie and Caleb on Blue Jay Central for you. Eric Smith and Chris LaRue on the radio. Blair and Barker are coming up for you 2-4. They'll also have you for Jays Talk post game, and I'm going to, of course, kick it over now to Jeff Merrick's show, who I bet they'll be talking about your Toronto Maple Leafs, who are headed for a Game 7 on Saturday. Thanks to Dan and Ryan for coming on. Thanks to Amit Mann, Lance Kennedy, Jake Schultz, Jennifer Rolnick behind the glass. Have a great weekend, everyone.